right, welcome to the show. Speak for yourself. I'm Greg Jennings. He's Mark Slareth in for Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined today by a couple of Pro Bowlers, TJ Houshmandzadeh and Sean Merriman. Let's start today in Pittsburgh, where Mike Tomlin addressed the latest drama swirling around his team, with conflicting reports popping up about why Antonio Brown didn't play in Pittsburgh's final game, and whether or not Brown requested a trade. Tomlin denied there was a trade request, but admitted Brown skipped Saturday's walkthrough and didn't exactly extend an olive branch to the receiver.
Did he quit on this team?
You know, you can describe it in whatever ways you want to describe it, but there was a lack of communication there that can lead to thoughts and things of that nature that can go in many directions. The bottom line is that we were playing a significant game, and he didn't do a good enough job of communicating or being available in the hours leading up to that performance. So we needed to make decisions pertinent to getting prepared to play in that performance. So I've been really clear about outlining what transpired, the level of communication, and things of that nature. So obviously there's some things within that that you can infer, certainly.
Is there a point where you have to step back and look at the way you're coaching your team and be more of a disciplinarian?
Certainly. I think that you're always taking a step back. And when I'm talking about taking a step back and waddling in it, I'm not only talking about those that play and those that coach in there. I start with the thumb. Okay, so most certainly.
Mark, so I come to you first. Yeah. With everything that's going on in Pittsburgh, looming around Antonio Brown, should the Steelers move on from Antonio Brown?
Yeah, you know, the player in me says, absolutely, get rid of the guy. He's a turd, right? I mean, that's the player in me. But the bottom line is the guy is so talented. And I think one of the issues that you get into is you look at the lack of discipline. And I applaud Mike Tomlin for saying, yeah, you know, I'm not pointing the finger, I'm pulling the thumb. It is on me. The lack of discipline is on me. And you've enabled him to act that way. This is not the first time. This is not like some isolated incident where he got mad, he threw a football, he decided not to show up to a walkthrough, right? This is something that has gone on inside that organization for years. As I mentioned yesterday on this program, he's got a mantra where he says, I'm going to put up with it until I can replace you. Well, you can't replace that production. So the bottom line to me is you've enabled a guy to act like a petulant child, and he's going to act like a petulant child. So until you stand up from a disciplinary standpoint, and it started that weekend against the Cincinnati Bengals, until you stand up and take control of your football team, this will continue to happen. And he's not alone, man. It's Ben Roethlisberger calling out teammates in the media. It's, you know, it's Le'Veon Bell. It's the offensive lineman that wouldn't support their running back when he didn't show up because of a contract issue. So this is endemic of the organization in general. You know, it's a systemic failure of organization. I put that mostly on Mike Tomlin.
For me, I just think you have to move on. Now, whether they are capable of moving on because of the contract, right, we all understand that. But from a player perspective, I think you have to move on from a guy like this. We all understand his production. How productive is he? Very. One of the most productive receivers in all of the National Football League. But and we talked about this yesterday, when you're trying to establish a culture, and you're trying to regain control of that culture, and Mike Tomlin being that he's trying to regain the control, you have to start by putting the hammer down and going to your front office saying, look, I understand the production that he provides us as a team and as an organization, but what we're trying to do, has it equated to Super Bowls? No. Has it equated to playoff wins? No. Has it equated to us getting to the playoffs even this year? No. So are we winning with him? Can we win without him? The answer to me is yes.
I look at it from the perspective, and we've all been in the locker room. There's four or five players on every team that operate on a different set of rules. Every team. Now, do those four or five players, are they professional enough to not make you look bad as a head coach? Do they cross the line and force you to put the hammer down, as you said? He's crossed the line, and this isn't the first time. It came to a head because they're all were but eliminated from the playoffs going into the last game of the season. Somebody on the team leaked that this incident happened with Roethlisberger. This has been going on for a long time. They just finally, it just became public now. Absolutely 100% they need to move on, because the culture is such, you'll see a young guy, he's seen Antonio Brown get away with this. If this is in his DNA, When he becomes the man, he's going to do it. It's going to be a recurring cycle. If you don't nip it in the bud now, by not playing, that was step one. By getting rid of him, that's step two, and guys will say, oh, wow. And Antonio Brown's one of the top two receivers in the league. He's going to be fine. He'll suffer from leaving Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh will suffer from him not being there.
You kind of beat me to it because we talk about the former players and the four or five guys you got on every team that can go and do certain things and probably get away with it more than the rest of the guys. One thing I haven't seen anything done was a football being thrown or a big altercation with your franchise quarterback. I don't care who you are. You can be the best wide receiver.
I've seen it.
Yeah, but yeah,
I've been through it.
Yeah, but Ben Roethlisberger was talking about a Super Bowl winning quarterback. We're talking,
future
Hall of Fame. We're talking about a different set of standards here, and we also know that he threw a football. They had multiple arguments, and now you're coming out and saying the things, and not only poking at Ben Roethlisberger, but you're poking at the organization. People not forget, Ben Roethlisberger, he's no saint in this situation. He's done, he's done some things. But one thing he's doing is he's playing the game right. Antonio Brown's a close friend of mine.
Yeah.
Boy, that's my boy. I wish that, he's one of my closest friends. I wish him to be back in the locker room. I hope the other guys accept him back. So he's taking all the blame off himself. Ben Roethlisberger is no angel here, but he's playing the game right. Antonio Brown is playing the game wrong, and it might not affect him because he is one of the best wide receivers in the National Football League, but it will affect the next time he moves on to an organization and this happens again, because then it's not going to look like Ben Roethlisberger's fault. It's not going to look like the organization's fault or anybody else in that team. It's going to be because of him and because of what he's doing now.
One of the issues, and we talk about culture, and I'm 100% with you guys, the culture, to me, culture beats scheme every day of the week. And I believe that. And, I was blessed to play on some really good teams, but I believe in that culture and establishing that culture. We always talk about policing our own locker room. When you have not policed it from upstairs, it becomes impossible for us to police it. There was in my day, there'd have been a fight. In the locker room. You'd have had to pull somebody off of Antonio Brown, and we would have been able to eventually take care of it. But if you haven't empowered your players because there is a bunch of different rules and you're not holding anybody accountable to the standard, and the standard in Pittsburgh should be win a championship. There's 12 teams, in my estimation, in every season, there's 12 teams that have championship pedigree and championship ownership that have a chance to win that. And Pittsburgh is one of those 12 teams. And guess what? Right now, the way they orchestrate within their organization, they don't have it.
So we all, I think we can agree, there should be some type of disciplinary action taken into consideration.
Antonio Brown wants this, bro. He doesn't want to be there.
He's already going with the whole James Harrison thing. He's taunting not only Ben Roethlisberger to play, he's taunting the organization now by saying we're going live during this press conference with James Harrison. You don't do that. I don't care who you are. Like, you might be going through with the team. Ben Roethlisberger could have done something behind closed doors. But when you start to kind of poke from, we're going to do this live, we're going to do this, like, you don't do that because you also have a legacy. You also built something that's going to be around for a long time. And you don't want to have that lingering on saying you did this.
It's what you said earlier, too, though. You go back to when Ben Roethlisberger technically attacked him publicly. I wish I had thrown every ball to Juju. When you say that, there's no going back from that. We can talk. We can communicate. And you and I, your quarterback says that deep down, you like, man, this dude are never cool. Like, I'll be cordial with you, but we're not cool. Just from that aspect early in the year, that just didn't happen this year. That's been lingering for years and years. When Ben came out and said what he said, they attacked Le'Veon Bell. Tomlin didn't say anything then. The whole team was a dude. Le'Veon Bell has friends in that locker room that disagreed with those guys that were attacking him. So right then and there, the locker room was divided and splintered, and they didn't make the playoffs. It lingered, and now here we are with this.
Even in this report, players said that Tomlin never addressed the situation. Like, how can you be in that locker room getting ready for a playoff game where it's win and hope that Baltimore loses? And if we get that done, we're in. And you don't address it? And I heard Ben Roethlisberger say, no, we're cool. Like, I called him Thursday night. If you're cool, you wouldn't need to call him Thursday night.
Right.
Right. You see what I'm saying?
He would have been in practice.
You wouldn't have needed to go, hey, are we okay? Like, no. So, I mean, it's the level of dysfunction and immaturity. And I said this to my son when my son embarked on his professional baseball career. And I said, just understand this, is that just because you play a pro sport doesn't make you a professional. Mm. And they got a bunch of guys in that locker room, in my estimation, from the outside looking in, that just don't approach it from a professional standpoint.
So now I pose this question to you guys. Has Mike Tomlin lost control of this Steeler locker room of this team.
Yeah, absolutely. It's worse now because when you have a guy, let's take the Giants, you know, for example. You got Odell or one guy acting up. You go and fix the problem. You're done with it. It's too many big personalities now. Now you got five or six or seven situations that you need to go and fix. Yes, you've lost the locker room. You should have done something a long time ago when you stepped in and you fixed the problem. That way it wouldn't link wrong to the next person, the next person, the next person. Because I don't see these same people, these same guys, offensive linemen or whoever is talking to say the same thing about Le'Veon Bell. I don't see them saying anything about Antonio Brown. So that means you got two guys in the offensive line that don't like Le'Veon Bell. You got another two or three guys that like – you know, the likes Antonio Brown. So you already have this division. You got too many big personalities, too many guys speaking up, and there's no way at this point unless you start to alleviate the problem and you get rid of some guys.
I really don't believe in a coach losing a locker room. Again, there's a handful of guys that can say what they want to say on every team. Rarely do they exert that power. You get rid of Antonio Brown, the locker room's fine. As long as you get – by him not playing, that was step number one. Guys were like, wow, playoffs on the line and they not letting him play? That was step number one where everybody was like, okay, Mike's serious. Mm-hmm. Once they trade him or if they try or attempt to trade him, the rest of the guys on the team are going to say, oh, okay, Mike T ain't playing. Immediately. He doesn't have to go out and say anything. By his actions, is going to show what he's meaning.
I will tell you this also. Within that locker room, at least my experience – the fact that the report is, okay, you're not going to play, but you can be on the sideline to support your teammates, and then he left at halftime, like that is a horrendous look for an organization. And if that doesn't get your ownership to want to move on that, and that's a whole nother thing.
That's another thing, right, Mark. It's not just Mike Tomlin. If owner, the cap hit is 21.2, who cares? If the culture of the team is what's important, it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, and for me, that's the part that stands out most. Him leaving or reportedly having left before the end of the game, that's a slap in the face to your head coach and to everyone on that team. The guys who you have practiced with mm-hmm. since training camp, off season, worked blood, sweat, and tears, and you walk out on me?
Right.
Like Mike Tomlin, I have to give Mike Tomlin this amount of credit. And I do believe he has lost control, but I do give him credit in a sense of he hasn't, to your point, lost it to where he's throwing guys under the bus. He didn't say Antonio Brown quit on us, although we all can read between the lines and say Antonio Brown walked out on this team. He quit on this football team. Yeah. And with that, just that alone, I can't have him back in my locker room.
But the issue for Mike Tomlin is he's going to have to address this team, you know, when the offseason happens, the OTAs happen, say, first off, you have to take ownership. Like, you have to take ownership of your failures and say, I have failed to hold guys accountable. I have let this stuff go on. I have created this mantra of I'll put up with it until I can replace you. Guess what? There's a new sheriff in town. None of those things are working, and we're no longer going to do this. And if you back that up with Antonio Brown doesn't play or we've tried to trade Antonio Brown, and then the one thing is you have to adhere it. So many times I've heard over the course of my career, like, that guy couldn't be, you know, one of us, and he doesn't fit our program, and that guy is this, that, and the other, right? And we play a certain way, and we adhere to a certain set of standards, and then the offseason rolls around, and you make that guy the highest-paid player on your team. You're like, dude, come on. For 4 years, I heard how that guy couldn't play for us, and now he's the highest-paid guy on our team. Like, you have to – it's one thing to preach it. It's another thing to live it. And for Mike Tomlin, you're going to have to live it. And if you do that, I think guys will follow. I think guys will – I'm with you. I think you can win them all back, or I think you can solve the issues there, but you have to set a standard, and then you'd have to adhere to that standard.
So in this press conference today, he did acknowledge the fact that it's me. I do need to change. My question then for Mike Tomlin is, when with change, does he regain the respect of the guys around him, or do they already – you guys know as players, do you already see him for who he is, and now you can't – you don't change in my eyes.
You know what's crazy? In 1 year, the Pittsburgh Steelers are losing their two best offensive weapons. In one season,
right.
Le'Veon Bell gone. Mm-hmm. Antonio Brown gone. Big Ben better carry this team because a lot of this is because of him, the friction – that these guys have with him, they better figure this out. Because this NFL is about winning games. You got to have good players. You're getting rid of your two best offensive weapons.
And their two biggest personalities. in the locker room. I think that's going to change a lot, too, because you have guys that just have more of an aura about them. They walk in the locker room, people want to be them, people want to be around them. They have all the fan attention. Everybody's always looking at them. You're getting rid of the two biggest personalities. I think you can regain the locker room back.
Mm. See, for me, personally, when I look at this situation and what Antonio Brown can cause as far as a rippling effect, I look at the New York Football Giants. When we saw Sterling Shepard act out this season on the sideline, what was the first person we brought up? Mm-hmm. Odell Beckham. Look, he's right. Learned from Odell Beckham. Right. This is the cause and effect that comes
but
with.
But you know what, though? Like, money doesn't change anybody. Money lets you become who you've always wanted to be. Maybe this was Sterling Shepard. Maybe we didn't know much about him, and he finally got a chance to play. He started balling. Okay, now I'm going to show you guys the real me.
Time for a big story. Greg Jennings and Mark Slareth in for Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Houshmandzadeh, Sean Merriman are back. Let's move to Dallas, where the Cowboys are getting ready for a wild card matchup with the Seahawks this week. But they're already facing a new round of doubters. According to the USA Today, the Cowboys are the worst team in the playoffs, despite winning the NFC East and earning a home playoff game. Mark, are the Cowboys really the worst team in the playoffs?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think ultimately, like that doesn't, Cowboy haters bring it on. I mean, I think ultimately, when you look at the quarterbacks and you look at the way the teams are constructed in the NFC playoffs, who do you trust the least? Like, if it comes down to, if you're game planning, you're saying, okay, these are the things we have to take away, right? And we're going to make one guy beat us, or we're going to make it's the New England Patriots philosophy. We're going to make you play left-handed. We're going to make somebody other than your stars beat you. So you've got to deal with the running game and Amari Cooper. But I think you're ultimately going, okay, we're going to load the box. We're going to play, you know, some type of double coverage, either, you know, swoop somebody underneath Amari Cooper or jam him up and play trail with somebody over the top. But we're basically going to take him away, and we're going to make Dak beat us. This guy has over 50 sacks from holding on the ball. I mean, there are times when I'm like, that thing is not a baby. If you pat it one more time, it will not burp. Throw the damn thing, right? So, I mean, you're looking at that and saying, yeah, they've got a really good defense. Yeah, their offensive line has been good. They've run the ball. But who do I trust the least when the pressure in the game is on the line to throw the football down the field to make completions? And that would be Dak. That's just kind of the year he's had.
That's strong. That's strong. For me, it's hard for me to say that they're the worst team
in
the playoffs.
Okay, well, who's worse?
Well, they beat the Philadelphia Eagles twice in the regular season. I understand it's the regular season, but they beat them twice. They have the best running game in all of football. Ezekiel Elliott led the league in rushing.
Right.
Defense top seven. So you have all these pieces. Dak Prescott obviously has his weapons. But when you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, do you really trust Nick Foles in that offense, in that defense who's been hurt? I understand they're playing well, but Nick Foles just is coming off of injury. We don't know how healthy he's going to be. Going into Chicago, I just don't know if I take the Cowboys to be the worst team in the playoffs.
You know, even if they were the second to worst, they're still bad. I mean it's only one team up. You know, they're not moving from like last to second or third. But, you know, look at the season they have, but you need more than that in the playoffs. You know, I mean, we've all been there. When you get there, you just need more than that running game, the defense. That's when the quarterback's got to step up. And you look at who they're playing. They're going to play Russell Wilson. I play with him. I know when it comes down to when the game's on the line, he's going to make less mistakes than Dak Prescott will. I think that's why this more of the conversation, because they could be going home. They probably, you know, more than likely they're going home. If they were playing somewhere else, if they were playing the Eagles, if they're playing with another team, then yeah, they maybe have a shot. But they're playing Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks, they're going home. So I don't think this conversation is far off no matter how you look at it. They probably, you know, the second at best worst team in the playoffs.
I can't call them the worst. I just can't. When I look at teams, the Cowboys in the playoffs have one of the best running backs. Check. One of the better offensive lines. Check. One of the better defensive lines. Check. The best linebacking core. Check. One of the top secondaries. So is everybody saying that Dak Prescott is just that bad? Absolutely not. To me, they're not the worst team in the playoffs. Who is? I mean, if you look at it, if you just go top to bottom, the Chicago Bears are the worst team. They have the best defense, but offensively, I will take the Dallas Cowboys offense over the Chicago Bears offense any day of the week. any day of the week.
TJ, you had me all the way
until the end.
You left that quarterback in that equation.
So you would take Mitchell Trubisky over Dak Prescott?
No. You know what? I wouldn't.
You would take Howard over Ezekiel Elliott?
It's not so much, and we'll get into
You're talking about the play caller.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
But the players, you got to execute.
Yeah. Here's the other thing that's interesting to me about this matchup, because they're playing Seattle. They're both constructed fairly similar. You know, they're going to run the ball. This is and again, I have a hard time, like, differentiating between they're the worst and they're the worst, because I'm looking at the matchup and I'm like, all right, this is going to go from 12 or 13 possessions down to about 9, because both these teams are going to run the snot out of the ball. So within 9 possessions, which quarterback do I trust in those 9 possessions to put up points? And I trust Russell Wilson. So maybe they're not the worst team, but this, to me, is an interesting matchup, and it really favors Seattle simply because they're both constructed almost the same way.
Yeah, when we look at this matchup, who do you trust more? It's no question. I think it's a no-brainer. We're all going to go with Russell Wilson because of his track record, because of what we know he does.
Who would you rather face, Seattle's defense or Dallas's defense? Who would you rather, the opposing offense, who would you rather go? Seattle's defense has played great as of late, but early in the season, they couldn't stop anything.
Right.
They're going to load up on a run. They're going to get man-to-man. You can't load up the run and double Amari Cooper. You got to do one or the other.
And I'm with you. I'm saying that the Dallas, they're not the worst team in the playoffs, but when you throw the Bears out
I'm not saying who's the worst team then?
Who's the worst team? If it's not Dallas, who is it?
I personally think the Eagles are the worst team in the playoffs right now.
I don't know who's the worst team, to be honest with you. If I had to pick one, I would say the Chicago offense is the worst. Like, it's hard to go the full team because do you look at the Eagles' defensive line? Haloti Ngata, Fletcher Cox, Michael Bennett, Brandon Graham, Chris Long. Yeah, their secondary is not very strong. Does Chicago throw the ball that great?
I understand.
I just feel if you need to win games in big-time playoff situations, the quarterback is what's going to come down to. It's an easier conversation because of who they playing. If they were playing someone else, then we can say, yeah, they got a shot at being second best or third whatever, or third or second worst in the league. But they're playing a team that we all know that has a high possibility of them going home. That's why this conversation makes it easier to call them the worst.
Yeah.
Worst.
I think the one thing about Chicago that's been really interesting, and having, you know, called one of their games and having met Matt Nagy, is from an offensive standpoint, from a creativity standpoint, a play calling standpoint, a schematic standpoint, I just think he is really at the top of his game. I'm with you on Mitchell Trubisky, although he does make some plays with his feet. Not that Dak can't, because Dak can. And I think that's got to be part of your game plan going in here, especially in the red zone. I think Dak has got to run the football. Mm-hmm. I think there's got to be designed runs to take some of the pressure off of him, throwing the football and making sure he doesn't hold it in the pocket.
So do we trust Dak at all in this game?
I trust him. His only playoff game, he was lights out. He was lights out against Green Bay. He was lights out. He didn't lose that game. He threw for over 300 yards. He played extremely well. It's can they run the ball effectively? Can Amari Cooper beat man-to-man coverage consistently? Seattle's going to man you up. They're going to play 8 in the box, single high coverage, one safety in the middle of the field. If they're able to run the ball effectively, they'll be fine. They'll be fine. I like Dallas to win.
They had success running the football against Seattle early in the season. We'll see if they can have success coming up. I'm Greg Jennings and Mark Schlereth in for Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Houshmandzadeh, Sean Merriman are back. Let's move to Chicago, where the Eagles will have their underdog masks back on this week against the Bears. It looks like Philly might have caught lightning in a bottle again with Nick Foles, but the Super Bowl MVP is about to run into Khalil Mack in one of the toughest defenses in the National Football League. Mark, will the Bears' defense put an end to the Foles' magic?
Yeah, you know what? I really do think they will. You look back to some of the great defenses here in the last few years, the 2013 Seahawks defense, the 2015 Broncos defense. To me, this is one of those defenses that can carry a team through a playoff game. And I think one of the interesting things, I believe they're listed as a 3-4 defense, but they play a five-man front. They play like a 5-2 defense with Khalil Mack, Hicks, and Leonard Floyd. They legitimately get 5 one-on-ones across the board. And they are absolutely beastly when it comes to putting pressure on the quarterback and controlling the line of scrimmage. And, you know, I mean, I think they have a really good secondary. I think Eddie Jackson's a really good young player. But the bottom line is this. they lock you up 5 one-on-ones and they beat you, and they consistently beat you. And that's to me the advantage that they play with on a consistent basis. We talk about the difference that Khalil Mack has made, and he's made a huge difference because he lets everybody else on that line of scrimmage. And Sean knows this. When you get a one-on-one matchup in this league at home with crowd noise, the defense that you have, man, especially with the offensive lines in the National Football League right now, it's like it's really impossible. And they do that to everybody.
Yeah, they had some success against Khalil Mack in the past when he was with the Raiders. They was using some slide protection and find a way to isolate him. But when he was playing with the Raiders, he didn't have an interior D lineman like we're talking about right now. He didn't have Akeem Hicks. He didn't have Leonard. He didn't have these guys. You can't do that anymore. You know, they isolate him by sliding, protecting, leaving running backs in, chipping them off the edge, bringing guys tight end down in motion and chipping them before they went out for their passing routes. You can do that when you don't have help up front. This can get ugly because now they got guys that are going to have one-on-one across the board. You're not blocking Khalil Mack one-on-one. You're not blocking him in a game of this magnitude one-on-one. That's not going to happen. So this game, they go out and get up a touchdown or two early on, and now he's free to get after the quarterback any way he wants.
See, what's going to happen is this. You can't let Khalil Mack, who's Chicago Bears' best defensive player, you can't let him beat you and impact the game that much. You still have to slide to him. You still have to chip him. If the other guys beat you, that's fine. You just can't let Khalil Mack get off with him being their best player. Me personally, I like the Eagles in the game just for the simple fact of when I look at the strengths of the Chicago Bears and the weaknesses of the Eagles, I think it meshes well for the Eagles to come out on top. That's an opinion of mine. Now, Doug Peterson, they're similar offenses, both come under Andy Reid. They've coached together many years. The Eagles have better offensive weapons. Chicago Bears have a better defense. What the Chicago Bears do well is run the ball. The Eagles are stout up front. You got Fletcher Cox and Haloti Ngata in the middle. In Chicago, it's going to be cold. They're going to run the ball. This game here, it's going to be very, very interesting, but there's no way Doug Peterson and that offensive staff, they let Khalil Mack get off. There's no way.
Yeah, I just think that the defense of the Chicago Bears will be too much. And when you look at it, you're talking about four Pro Bowl defensive players on all levels. The interior linemen, the defensive linemen, the linebacking core, and the secondary. And what the Eagles try to do best, or what they have proven to do best with their number one receiver, Zach Ertz, Chicago takes that away. That's what they do. That's their strength. They take away your tight end. With Eddie Jackson, barring his health, and we're assuming that he will be playing on this week's game, I think that the defense of what the Chicago Bears pose to the offense of the Philadelphia Eagles, it's too much. And when I look at Nick Foles, I just have to be honest. Can he endure? Can he sustain standing in the pocket, taking hit after hit? Because it's not a matter of will they hit him. How many times will they hit him? And will he be able to bounce back? I just don't see Nick Foles being able to stand in that cold. And it's a different cold than they experienced in Philly in Lincoln Field. This is Chicago Bears. This is Soldier Field. This is off that Lake Michigan. This is that win. This is where they thrive. I like the Bears in this matchup.
Yeah, this is one of those to me where you scrap pile about three quarters of your playbook and say, hey, we're going to run three-step drops, five steps without a hitch, and we're going to try to run the ball if you can get that done. I don't know that you can, but Russell Wilson, that week two, I'll throw that away, six sacks.
Seahawks are struggling early.
Early, they were trying to do something that wasn't their kind of genre of football. Mm-hmm. They've changed. But Jared Goff a few weeks ago, week 14, 0 for 4, 0 TDs, 4 interceptions, 45 completion percentage. Aaron Rodgers, week 15, 0 TDs, 1 interception, 68.9 passer rating. I mean, they are
but
ridiculous.
We could go counter that and say, wow, Brock Osweiler beat him. You see, so there's always two coins to an argument. Brock Osweiler beat him this year.
He did, and to that point, I called that game down in Miami.
They were behind, and they made some ridiculous plays.
Eli Manning beat him.
Peyton Manning is there. Brock Osweiler was his first start this year under Adam Gase, a guy who drafted him. I mean, he had so much going for him in that game, and it was a letdown game. It really was, and I just don't see the Chicago Bears letting up on the Philadelphia Eagles to where they come out on top.
Yep.
Will be interesting.
Yeah, it will be interesting, no question. All right, let's move on to Baltimore, where Lamar Jackson and the Ravens will host the Chargers in a wild card matchup Sunday. Lamar will be the youngest quarterback ever to start a playoff game, which might not bode well for him in Baltimore. Since 2010, rookie QBs are 0-5 against veterans in the postseason. So I put it to you, Greg, do you think Lamar can buck this trend?
I do. I like Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens against. Oh, God.
You
know, against your boys.
Look, I knew what's coming. I knew what's coming. I wasn't trying to be a homer, but I'm going to let you do your
thing. I like them against the Chargers because they have an identity, and their identity fits. It literally couldn't fit any better for Lamar Jackson and what they try to do. They want to run the ball. They want to eliminate your time of possession, your amount of possessions, and they want to allow their defense to rest because we're going to weigh on you more than anything. This defense of the Baltimore Ravens is what has gotten them into this position. And what Lamar Jackson has provided as a spark addition to their running game that was already effective, he's just added that much more. And when we look at the five outcomes of these young rookie quarterbacks, one out of five of these games were played at home. And that was Dak Prescott, to your point. You mentioned it a couple years ago against Aaron Rodgers and that throw he made on the sideline to Jared Cook, which beat the Cowboys and allowed Mason Crosby to kick that field goal. When you look at that, he's playing at home. A lot of these young quarterbacks didn't have the luxury of playing at home. They had to go on the road. They didn't have the luxury of really having an offense that just was tailor fit for them. So I like Lamar Jackson in this matchup against your guys.
You know, I don't, by the way.
My
thing is I do give Lamar Jackson this. I went to the game and I seen him up close and personal for the first time. I was there to see how fast he was. I knew he was fast, but I didn't know how fast this guy was. He had a play where he rolled out, you know, to the right and ran over to the sideline and kept running over the bench in the back and never even broke stride. I said, man, this guy is a different level of speed. This is a problem. He's still a rookie. I don't care what anyone says. You can still make him one-dimensional. You can still confuse him. And coming into this game, you know that he can possibly beat you with his legs. The first thing I would do from play one, just spy him. You can't leave a D lineman in his spine. You got to leave a linebacker or drop somebody else down there that's going to be able to have enough speed to catch in the spine. And two, make him beat you with his arm. He has a big arm, but he's not accurate yet. He had a couple big throws in the Chargers game that he threw the ball in the end zone 40 or 50 yards or 60 yards down the field, but it was nowhere near the wide receiver. So he can throw the ball. He's just not accurate. When you're playing against a rookie wide receiver coming into the game, we just talked about the Patriots making you throw with your left hand. You know what to take away from him. You know, as long as you can keep him in the pocket, keep those outside linebackers and defensive ends rushing in their rushing lanes and don't let him scramble and get outside the pocket, make him throw the ball down the field, you can get up on this guy early. And once you get up on him, he's not able to come back. He's not at that level. He will in the next year or two get at that level. But right now, he's not at that level.
I would agree with you in this, is that if they get behind, they're in trouble. He's not going to.
Yeah.
But here's the interesting part, having called their game, one of their games, and really dissected this offense, I've never seen anything like it. Like now, I've been involved in the NFL for 30 years, 12 as a player, 18 as an analyst. I blocked for a 2,000-yard rusher. I have never seen the size of holes that they create on the offensive side of the ball ever. I mean, like, oh, my God, I'm watching film. I'm like, that's the biggest hole I've ever seen. And I'm like, oh, wait, no, that's the biggest hole I've ever seen. Wait a minute, that's the biggest hole. I mean, it's absolutely insane. And, you know, running the football oftentimes is it's a 10-on-11 game, right? 10, you hand it off, and it's 10-on-11. And then you had the Wildcats of his 11-on-11. Man, they will pull tight ends. They'll ghost motion people. Yep. They'll fake a block on the end. They'll release to the second level, the third level. They really, if you split it in half and you start doing number counts, they don't block anybody on the backside because they're so dynamic athletically, right? And they get extra guys on the front side. So if you split it in half, it's like 7-on-5 football. It is like they're gaining two extra men because they're optioning somebody. It is your eye discipline and your ability as a defender is challenged on every single play. And then you couple that with the fact that they are one of the best defenses, one of the most tied together defenses. And Sizzle on one, CJ Mosley. They've got, Weddle in the back end, three corners that can flat play. I mean, this is a really good football team.
I'm torn on this game. It's hard to beat a really good team twice in such a short span. And you go back to that game, Keenan Allen got hurt early.
He didn't play. They had a chance to win. Antonio Gates fumbled late. Yep. Lamar Jackson makes a great throw to Mark Andrews. It's, oh, man, like, if I had the pick, I would say Baltimore just because they're playing at home. But I really, really like the Chargers. The whole, just their dynamic on offense. Go to your,
right.
Greg Roman has gotten overlooked with what he's done in Baltimore. Morningweg is an OC, but Greg Roman came from San Francisco when they had Colin Kaepernick when Jim Harbaugh was there.
Yes.
And they've integrated some of the same little system offensively. And Greg Roman has done a great job. And a lot of people give the credit to Marty Morningweg, but I think they're going hand in hand. But this game for me is the game of the week. It's a game that is hard for me to pick, but I would pick Baltimore just because of it's at home and it's really loud playing when you get to playing in Baltimore.
Because of Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, it's what you can't even spawn with a linebacker.
Yeah.
They're,
no,
not fast enough.
They're not fast
enough. You have to bring in a corner or a safety that can really run because he's going to outrun the linebacker. Yeah, it's because of Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. And then I just can't get it out of my head where if that game when they played out here, that defensive line of Baltimore, they were in Phillip Rivers' face the entire game.
If they weren't sacking him, they were hitting him.
Right.
The entire game.
It's funny you mentioned spying. It's like interceptions, you know, when I was playing. If somebody had to run 40 yards, you're scoring. Like, either we're scoring or you're scoring if you're relying on me to chase somebody down. So it's like putting an offensive lineman out there and go spy that guy. Like, I don't care who you put out there. When he takes off, if you're flat-footed, you have zero chance.
Gone.
Zero chance of stopping Lamar.
Welcome back. Greg Jennings and Mark Schlereth in for Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Houshmandzadeh, Sean Merriman are back. Let's return to the playoffs, where two AFC South teams will face off this weekend, with Andrew Luck and the Colts heading to Houston to take on Deshaun Watson and the Texans. It will be Deshaun's first postseason start ever and Luck's first since the Deflategate game 4 years ago. Mark, I ask you first, are you more confident this weekend in Luck or Watson?
I'm going to go with Watson. Obviously playing at home, but, you know, to me it comes down to this. Which guy is going to make more off-schedule plays? And I just look at Deshaun Watson, one, pushing the ball down the field, but his ability inside the pocket to manipulate the pocket, to scramble around, to buy time for himself, either to make plays with his feet or to push the ball down the field successfully when things are off schedule. I just think he's really good at that. And then ultimately, you know, it comes down to complementary football for me. And do I look at the Texans' defense and their ability to pressure Andrew Luck? I mean, that defense is one that, you know, will give you nightmares as a former offensive player, having to block all those guys with J.J. Watt making the comeback that he made this year. So I just have more faith in the off-scheduled nature that I think both offenses will have to orchestrate from, that I have more faith in Deshaun Watson and his ability to move in the pocket and make plays down the field.
Andrew Luck. I'm gonna jump in there right now. Andrew Luck. He clearly would be the front runner for MVP had it not been for a guy in Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes. Mm. I mean, his numbers this year, arguably some of the best. Obviously, Drew Brees would be in that that conversation as well. But what Andrew Luck has done, no one saw this year. Coming off of that injury, that significant, I don't care who you are, no one saw this coming. But what the Colts have done, they understand who's most important and what is most important. Look at these stats. Their success started by simply protecting Andrew Luck. Since week 7, NFL low in sacks. They are they rank first overall in sacks allowed. So that defense that we're talking about down in Houston, who can get after the quarterback, we understand that. They're going against an offensive line, and you know how important it is to protect your guy who makes everything go. They don't let other opposing defenses touch their quarterback. And when you look at the Houston Texans on the reverse side, on the flip side, they're dead last because of the extended plays and the ability. And this is some of the pros and the cons that you get with a guy like Deshaun Watson that you kind of take on the chin because his ability to extend the plays. He does take more sacks. He holds on to the ball a little bit more because of that. And I just trust Andrew Luck and that supporting cast more.
Yeah, I think Deshaun Watson, I think he comes out on top of this game. And one, we're talking about being able to create plays with these defensive linemen up front and being able to get after you. They're going to get Andrew Luck off the spot. If you look at him, his percentages, and watching him moving off of the spot and being able to be mobile and throw the ball on a run, I know Deshaun Watson has been hit more. I know he's taking more sacks. But when this game come down to it, you got to create something big and make it happen because it's, if you look across the board, they got, you know, both got a wide receiver they can go through. They both got guys on the offense side of the ball who can create at the end of the game when the game gets close and it gets on the line. Deshaun Watson is able to extend plays, throw the ball down the field, and I don't think that Andrew Luck is going to be able to do that towards the end of the game when it gets close, when the Davion Clowney and J.J. Watt is standing in his face, not always getting a sack on him, but just getting in his face, making a move off of the pocket, throwing off the runs, and creating turnovers.
Well, I got confidence in both of them. Now, who do I think is going to win the game? The New England Patriots fan, they better hope the Houston Texans win. That's the only chance of winning a playoff game, number one. So it's – Andrew, you go to stats with Andrew Luck. The reason he's not being sacked, he understands now, let me get rid of this
get
ball.
Get rid of that right. football.
So it's not – is the offensive line playing better? Yes, they are. But he's helping them out. He's getting rid of the ball quicker. Whereas Deshaun Watson, you take the good with the bad. He's going to hurt us and take some sacks. But he's going to help us, too, by extending plays and making something out of nothing. If you look at the entire team, Houston has they have better playmakers. Defensively, they have, on paper, that defensive line. Will it affect the game because Andrew Luck is getting rid of the ball so fast? I like both quarterbacks, but I will roll with Deshaun Watson in this game.
Yeah, it's funny, and you bring up Andrew Luck, and you bring up the offensive line, the protection. And it's one of the reasons that if I had a vote and I don't have a vote for Rookie of the Year, I'd vote for Quentin Nelson. Like, Quentin Nelson absolutely destroys dudes.
Yes, he
and
does.
Not only does he destroy dudes, then he rubs his undercarriage up their face mask. And basically, like, I mean, he's got zero respect. And I love it. I mean, the guy
you gotta
has
be
been,
that way.
He's been an unbelievable difference maker for them. But again, it comes up to the off-schedule stuff. And I just think Deshaun Watson is going to find a way to make plays off schedule that Andrew Luck won't.
I mean, if we're talking about off schedule, and I'm not changing my answer, I'm still more confident in Andrew Luck. But I, by no means am I saying that Deshaun Watson isn't fully capable and doesn't have what it takes. Because when you watch him and you watch him with a receiver like Hopkins on the outside, Nook, what they have, that chemistry – matter of fact, they don't even really need chemistry. All he needs to do is get the ball in that vicinity, and he's going to make
a
catch.
He had 115 catches.
Zero drops.
The dude, his hands are like
– yeah.
He catches the ball so easy.
In
and
traffic,
it's almost like
– contested.
And people will say this is Deshaun Watson's first playoff game. But when you play against Alabama in college and come up clutch the way he's been in big games – this game here is going to be a shootout. It'll be a shootout because over the regular season, Andrew Luck averaged 430 yards passing in two games. That's almost unheard of.
You hear that?
Yeah.
Give me your defensive stats I need some defensive linemen to get this in his face.
But this is going
to
happen. Deshaun Watt's going to have the ball more, right? Because the defense is going to create these turnovers, giving him more opportunity. I'm not saying he still take them sacks. He'll still get hit. He'll still probably do some negative things by just holding on the ball too long and trying to do too much. But when you have more opportunities because the defense is going to put the ball back on your hands, that's when it's going to be created. That's where they're going to win the ball game at. And I don't think the defense of the Colts is strong enough to get the ball back in Andrew Luck's hand more. So he's going to have just based on pure opportunity, end up getting the ball more, he'll have more opportunity.
They need to do a good job, the Houston Texans defense, of shutting down T.Y. Hilton. He's killed the Texans. Romeo Crennel's the defensive coordinator in Houston, comes under Bill Belichick. You can't let T.Y. Hilton get off. T.Y. Hilton was like, I read a quote where he was like, I'm hurt, but we're playing Houston. I feel good now. So that tells you all you need to know. He's got off against Houston. They need to slow him down.
That's definitely right. The case. Both of these teams are in great position with these two quarterbacks. Welcome back, Greg Jennings and Mark Schlereth in for Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by NBA champion Dante Jones. Let's move to the NBA, where James Harden ended 2018 in style, dropping a 43-point triple-double in a win over the Grizzlies on Monday. After a rocky start to the year, Harden has now scored 40 or more in four straight games, and the Rockets have won 10 of their last 11. Dante, I start with you. Are you buying that the Houston Rockets have figured it out?
They figured out the short-term problem, and that's to be a great regular season team and to to uphold the expectations that are on them at the beginning of the season. So they'll be finish anywhere between second and third in the Western Conference. But to be a championship caliber team, they're going to need Chris Paul to come back, be healthy, and be available when it comes conference finals time to be able to finish off a team and get to the finals. I think he wants to be a champion, not just hold a bunch of regular season records. And he's in great company right now with champions, and that's what set them other guys apart. Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, he joined those categories with him. But he wants to be a champion to join that category with them to be able, so his legacy can live on forever.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. I think that right now, this looks great. And it's great for what James Harden is doing. I think he's having a tremendous tear with this 40-point run, but it's just not sustainable. When you look at guys who have done things like this, take a look at a couple years ago with Russell Westbrook. It looked great with all the regular season triple-doubles, all the numbers he was able to put up, but what did it do for them in the playoffs? Nothing.
He wore down.
Nothing. He was wore out. And so when I look at the lack of having CP3, mind you, he's kind of a shell of himself this year. He hasn't been the same CP3 that we've seen in years prior throughout his career. They will need that moving forward. But right now, yes, it looks good, but it's not sustainable.
Here's what you could fit what I know about the NBA in a thimble. Okay, that's about that's about where we are right now. But here's what I do know. Is it sustainable? Like this 10-game streak he's on, he has scored 40, he's averaged 40 points per game in a 10-game streak. You know how many times that's happened in the last 30 years? Twice.
Right.
Two other times. Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. So it's not sustainable. CP3's health, is that sustainable? It hasn't been. He missed time last year. And I know this, you can knock down shots, you can play that game, and you can win a game, but you can't win a 7-game series if you're relying on shooting three-pointers and getting to the foul line. You got to do other things in what I do know about the NBA. I just don't think that's a formula for long-term success, especially in a 7-game series when the games are called a little bit tighter, a little bit differently in the NBA, in the NBA championship series.
Yeah, he's holding up his end of the bargain right now. He's the greatest scorer in our game right now. He's assisting. He's doing things to help the team win right now. But his future is held in Mike D'Antoni and Chris Paul's hands. Whether Chris Paul can be healthy for an extended period of time and be healthy throughout the whole playoffs, and whether Mike D'Antoni can make adjustments when it comes time for conference finals and finals time. Mike D'Antoni's system has not made a finals yet, and that's what James Harden's legacy is hinged on right now.
Is that the lack of adjustments defensively? Is that just the run-and-gun style with which they play?
To adjust that style and adjust defensively, that's where Mike D'Antoni has to be judged at this point in time. And that's his next level as a coach. I think James is going to always be James. He's going to wear out sometimes, but that's why he has Chris Paul to help him out in those times and defend and to lead and do all those other things in that capacity. But he's going to need Chris and Mike to hold their weight for him to be a champion.
I'm glad you mentioned CP3 because he's out right now and he's doing this without him. When he comes back, do they still have this amount of success with Chris Paul in the lineup?
I think they do because James is the focal point for every defense and CP can find his way and affect the game in many other ways rather than scoring the ball. He doesn't have to be ball dominant. He can spot up and shoot. And I think James is in a good groove enough to be able to help CP find his way back in the lineup and find a way to be a possible championship contender.
Do they have enough on this roster? We obviously know what James Harden brings to the table. We obviously know who CP3 is, but his track record in the postseason hasn't been great. Do they have enough to make a deep run to win a championship this year?
They're always trying to make themselves better, and I think they're probably one or two shooters away because Eric Gordon's health is in consideration at this point in time as well. A defender and a shooter is something that they're looking to pick up that gap that Trevor Ariza left behind. And that's going to help them become a championship caliber team because you have to defend and be a high power offensive team to be in a hunt for a championship like the Golden State Warriors or anybody that's in that category.
Yeah. All right. Elsewhere in the West, Paul George will face off against LeBron and the Lakers tonight for the first time since spurning them in free agency. PG took a lot of heat for his decision to stay in OKC, but he's having one of the best seasons ever. And the Thunder are sitting at the number 3 seed right now as we speak. Dante, does George's success make the decision the right decision for him?
Yes, because he's comfortable. And I think we all know what it feels like to play with guys that you're comfortable with, who's on the same wavelength of, that as you're on. I think taking his talents to L.A. would have been a chance, whether he's comfortable with LeBron there with the same type of personalities or approach to the game. That would have been taking a chance. But by getting traded to OKC, he found his match. He found a guy that he was aligned with, and he found a guy that he thought he can build and get towards a championship with. And I respect that because I've had the most fun and the most success on teams where I've had deep relationships and people that understood me. And I think they have a cohesive unit, a cohesive core that can build towards a championship. And I think that's why he's most comfortable right now.
How I guess, difficult has it been, or how interesting has it been for you to watch where a guy that was completely ball dominant in Westbrook, these two kind of coexist and find kind of a rhythm to where right now they're, like I said, the third seed in the West?
Well, I think that's part of Russell Westbrook's maturity that he doesn't get credit for. He's taken a step back and said, you know what, I have to give these guys more of a rein. I have to not try and control as much as the game and affect the game in more ways than just scoring. And when he spoke the other day talking about I'm the best rebounder, I'm the best on-ball defender in the guard category, he's trying to take those stances so that the other guys can be themselves, flourish, and get better. And I think as he does that, they get better, they all improve, and they move up in the Western Conference standings.
Yeah, I like Paul George making a decision on what he knew was best for him, right, not what everyone else thought would be better for him. And you only know that yourself, given the situation that you and your experience in that current situation. I know from my experiences leaving Green Bay to go to Minnesota, everyone's like, oh, you're leaving Aaron Rodgers, you're leaving the Green Bay Packers. But you didn't, what people didn't know was what I was walking into, not just football related, financially, from a family perspective, relationships, what I thought of those things, they all come into play. Definitely. And when you talk about the relationship and the rapport and the respect that he has for now Russell Westbrook, think about the celebratory party that he threw for him. Right. When he says, I'm coming back, I'm going to play. That means so much more. It's specifically, I believe, in a league like the National Basketball Association, where there's so many, only so few players, to where you have to have relationships with one another to afford yourself opportunities to compete against teams like Golden State Warriors and those teams like that. So I like what he did with staying in OKC. I think it's worked out well for him.
Right. They have a genuine friendship. They have a genuine compassion for each other, mm-hmm, as basketball players, but as men as well. And I think that's the challenge for GMs, to build teams with like-minded people, with like-minded sets of competitiveness. Guys who are focused on the same goal, and some guys are not focused on winning a championship, but I think those two were. I think he saw it in his eyes. I think he saw it off the court with the person that he is, that he gets to compete with and go to work with on a daily basis, and it was the fit for him. And I'm proud of him for taking a stance in what is right for me rather than what the media thinks. I think he's an outdoorsman, so the OKC lifestyle fits him on and off the court.
Okay, let me ask you this. I mean, obviously you don't have to put up with the circus that follows LeBron, right? Although you're not getting pregame wine in OKC, so you're not going to get that. But you don't have to put up with the circus. But in all seriousness, when you look at the West now, and you look at what the Nuggets are doing under Mike Malone, and you look at, you know, what the Warriors are, and you look at Houston, like, where do they fit? Do you look at that team, OKC, as a championship contender? Do you think that they can win and get to the NBA Finals in that West?
To your first point, the circus comes with winning, because even Steve Kerr said, we're the most scrutinized team in basketball. Why? Because you win on a consistent basis. Yeah. And LeBron James gets the circus because he's a winner. He's been to 8 straight finals. Okay. But OKC, I think, is the second best team in the West. And I said it at the beginning of the season because of the dynamic that they built and the consistency from as their roster moving into season 2 with Paul George.
Second best behind?
Behind the Golden State Warriors.
When the word of the Nuggets come in on that for you?
I think the Nuggets are a young team that are going to have some playoff success and get to the playoffs and going and maybe win a series, but they don't have the experience to advance to those levels. They're kind of like a Clippers team or a Rockets team that has take those hits in the playoffs to be able to grind it out and learn how to win in the playoffs and learn how to be a championship contender. They're doing great things in a regular season, but as we know, when the playoff times come, it's a total different season, and you have to learn how to win a 7-game series, and they just don't have enough experience on that roster.
Yeah, for me, I'll add this. Last year with Paul George and Russell Westbrook, I think having a guy like Carmelo Anthony, you're bringing 3 All-Stars together, the expectation is automatically they can make it work because the level of talent that you just put out on the court, and it's not that easy. And what I've seen with these two being in cahoots together, they understand, look, I respect you not only on the court, off the court, to where I'm willing to defer to you at any given moment because of the amount of respect that I have for you, because I know who you are, I know what you're about, and I can trust that. That's what produces winning.
The egos come out of the way in a situation like that, where people say, are you the number one or the number two? No, I know him. I know how he competes. I know how he works. I know his heart. So I don't have to worry about whether I'm one or two. I just know that we're moving together towards trying to win a championship.
We're all in a business, and I always say this with my own business back in Denver, is you're either in the relationship business or you're going out of business. And to me, they look lockstep in the relationship business, and that's why they're playing so well.
Definitely. Love it.
Welcome back. Jennings and Slareth in for Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Houshmandzadeh and Sean Merriman are back. Time for Antisocial. Our social media manager, Darnell Smith, is here guide us. What you got for us today, Darnell?
What up, man? We're going to start with the Sugar Bowl, where Texas beat Georgia on Tuesday. But before the game, Bevo, the Texas mascot, posted this picture with Georgia's mascot, Uga, with the caption, pals. But a little later, Bevo changed his mind, knocking down his barricade and charging at Uga, who was pulled out of harm's way. Austin native and Saints quarterback Drew Brees couldn't believe it, tweeting, not sure if I've ever seen a real mascot go after the other during pregame. I wonder what the Bulldog said to Bevo. All right, y'all, this is crazy. Luckily, no one was hurt. Which college mascot do y'all think is the most intimidating?
I think we just saw it. I don't think there's any college mascot that's going to challenge that right there.
I just looked at that and said, put him in R1, have him run down on kickoff, right?
Right.
I'm like, timeout.
Man.
What about your Broncos?
The way he ducked that head?
Yeah. And
really tried. Man.
I never seen a Bulldog move so fast. Oh, you know the dogs don't move that fast. He got out of there.
Yeah, he wanted
Bevo. He straight set the tone to what we saw in that game.
He did.
Hey, they might want to leave Bevo at home from here on out. That was scary. It was the mascot, the people around.
I think Ball State, our mascot, Charlie DeCarno, could hang with
him. Man,
but that just my
opinion.
Yeah, man.
Sit on top of him.
He gonna toy with him. He gonna move it. Bounce around.
You're stick and move.
Yeah. Oh, you get stuck. One of those horns.
Yeah.
Ain't no way. What else you got for us, Darnell?
All right, man. Let's talk Alvin Kamara, who was also at the Sugar Bowl yesterday, held in Kamara's home stadium, the Superdome. Excuse me. Kamara was on the field for the game, but not for long. Check this tweet out. Let me tell y'all about how I just got kicked off the sideline at the Sugar Bowl by the coordinators. Then he proceeded to throw some folks under the bus, saying, "I love my Superdome staff. It wasn't them. It was the Sugar Bowl staff." Ooh, I'm telling. Can y'all believe Kamara got kicked off his own sidelines?
Yeah, well, you were a Tennessee guy. Like, why are you, what are you hanging around for?
Like, he's a football fan.
That's the stadium.
Like, you mean to tell me this is a stadium I play my home games in and I can't just come and slide on the sideline and watch the game?
Yes. No.
Come on,
yeah, that's
man.
Exactly what I'm telling you.
He thought because he's at the Sugar Bowl, it's going to be sweet.
I've done that before in Cincy. They had a concert, just creep through the locker room and walk on out.
That's with the staff that knows your face.
Right.
Oh, that's TJ. Let's let TJ slide. Look, he said it. It was a Sugar Bowl staff. Look, we don't know you. We don't know you the way your New Orleans team staff knows you. I need you to get up. What else you got for us, Darnell?
All right, man, moving over to the NBA. The Greek Freak posted this video of him crushing some weights during an off day. For you weight room rookies out there, those are called glute bridges. And it looks like he has over 500 pounds on the bar, similar to the weight I tend to warm up with. But anyways, after the workout, Giannis challenged Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock, to a weightlifting contest after he posted the same workout on his Instagram page. So, guys, who would win this weightlifting contest? Come on, y'all. Why are you laughing, Greg?
Look, he's gonna go do the one exercise.
Hey, he don't want no parts of the rack and walk in the weight room.
No, come on.
Hey, look, put that on the bench rack or the squat rack and let me see you do that.
Yeah, you know what? Dwayne can do it. DJ can do it on the bench rack.
Right.
I guarantee you, Giannis is gonna get crushed. I mean, you'll be like screaming for help.
He don't want no parts of The Rock. The Rock look like, you look at that picture, look like he eating weights for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah, man, this is one, and I don't like to say there are easy workouts. there are easy exercises.
That is one of the
easiest movements right there with the weight that he moving.
And he ain't even getting the full extension.
He's not, oh,
he's not even getting the full extension.
Your glutes not firing. Yeah, yeah, there come on now.
He what else you got for us? Oh my gosh, man.
What else you got for us, Darnell?
Yeah, moving on to your best friend, Greg, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, whose girlfriend, Danica Patrick, posted on Instagram about how great 2018 was. There was one picture in particular that stood out with Aaron and Danica wearing elf hats while decorating Christmas stockings. Aaron's smiling, but look at his eyes. Remind me to do it.
Get out.
Or maybe he's just upset about missing the playoffs. But I like to ask his former teammate, Greg, does Aaron look happy here?
Hey, look, so when it's funny that we put that get out face on Aaron Rodgers, because when you look at his hands, it looks like, stop, like, turn the camera off.
Right.
Please.
Don't take this picture.
It doesn't look like he's too fond of that moment. But I'm going to gracefully bow out because I'm not going to talk about his situation.
Okay.
I'm going to let these fine gentlemen who are more.
you know he don't want to be right. doing that. No. You know he doesn't want
Wait
that camera
first,
face
First off, it's been a great 2018. They've won 6 games. They're out of the playoffs. The coach got fired, and he's doing arts and crafts. Like, how can that be a great 2018?
Hey, Aaron, I'm going to take a picture. And he's like, come on, don't take that picture.
Right.
She took it anyway.
Yeah, ain't no winning that, though. Mm-hmm. Not with the girl.
You're smart. You got to go ahead and
take
it.
You're going to take that picture.
Right. You're going to be arguing afterwards.
What else you got for us, Arnell?
All right, last but not least, man. Yesterday on Lock It In, my guy Clay Travis showed up with a unique look. Take a listen.
Nashville's very own Clay Travis and his mustache. Boys, how do we feel about this today? Anyone? Okay, that is
it's
a
you
moment
know what,
of silence.
You know what, he looks,
for the
I'm
going
to tell you something. He looks like Ron Burgundy and Ron Jeremy had a child.
Okay, don't want to know that person.
Hey, I think you pulled his look off.
You know what? I'm always suspicious. When I see stashes, like,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
I'm always suspicious. Like, kids, hold on. Don't cross the street.
What else you do for a living,
right,
bro?
Dude, he looks like everybody's creepy uncle.
Yeah.
Like, everybody has a creepy uncle that came over the holidays. That's what he looks like. Clay Travis is everybody's creepy uncle now.
Yeah, Clay, he needs to shade that off. You see, when they asked the question, they both sat there like, we don't have nothing nice to say.
Right.
We didn't shave him off, Kyle.
Even when I'm looking at it, I'm thinking like, okay, do I say what I really want to say he looks like right now, or do I just hold that?
Rachel didn't say a word. Nobody said anything.
Just shaking my head. When I look at it, do y'all remember Dewey from Scary Movie?
Oh, yeah.
He looked just like Dewey to me when I see that picture. Man, he got that same mustache. Stats, man.
I love it. Love
it's
it.
Hilarious.
I appreciate it, Darnell.
Yep.
All right, earlier in the show, we talked about Mike Tomlin, who has been dealing with nonstop drama this year in Pittsburgh. Things haven't slowed down since the end of the season, with controversy swirling around Antonio Brown. Let's get into our approval rating for Tomlin. Slareth, man, I see your approval rating, but mine, I have him at GOAT status. And the reason why is when I look at the job performance this year, with no Le'Veon Bell to start the season,
mm-hmm.
with all the bickering back and forth, mixed messaging with he and Big Ben Roethlisberger, his franchise, and what he was still able to do. We need one game. I'm going to bench my star receiver and still come out on top and win that game. And we fall up short because we had to rely on somebody else. I think job performance, he still was able to perform. Didn't get it done all the way, but he still performed.
Yeah, you're wrong. We got that one win, which got us not into the playoffs. That's where we are. I mean, I look at this as one of the most dysfunctional organizations, one of the most talented groups of players that we have in the National Football League, and completely dysfunctional. I have to put that on the head coach. So that's where I go with this. I mean, you know what? We'll see how he goes forward. Because he did bench Antonio Brown. I'll give him credit for that. But the bottom line to me is you've got one of the most talented teams in football, and you didn't make the playoffs. Your team underachieved. You haven't addressed the issues within that locker room with Antonio Brown, with Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell misses camp, doesn't sign his tender, and what happens? The whole team rags on him in the media. They didn't say anything. They just let it go. So to me, that's a failure from the top down. And that has to go on Mike Tomlin. That's why I've got him at
role player.
He's a role player right now. He's got to earn it back with me.
A role player. Come on. I'm talking about, he's been to 2 Super Bowls.
Yes.
1-1.
What, a decade ago, Super Bowl, right?
He's not the reason why the locker room is the way it is.
Well, who's in charge of discipline?
He's in charge of discipline.
Oh, and you don't discipline your children. If you don't discipline your children, that's on you.
Eventually, when your children come of age, do you still have to reel them in and say,
hey. Heck yeah, my children are of age. Okay. And if my son or my daughters do something stupid, I'm calling them on.
And you can control what they do?
Well, I can make sure that the money that flows their direction when they need it doesn't flow their direction. Well, I've got ways.
He's not flowing the money any direction. That's the Rooneys right there. Okay. Well, that's it for us.